Good morning and welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. I'm Amy Otto, joined by Lee Cantor. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Miss Amy. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Loving fall.
You're loving it. The colors have all changed.
It's beautiful.
Isn't it a great time of year?
It's a perfect time of year, especially if you like the outdoors. It's been just
Have you been outdoors? Not counting your backyard?
Not counting my backyard yet. I've been doing some hiking, actually gotten on the river, been doing a little kayaking.
Nice.
The river's cold.
Cold, I would imagine.
Do you know it never gets above like 54 degrees on the Chattahoochee River?
Did not know that.
The water temperature?
Yeah. How do they maintain that?
Well, it's just really cold. Wouldn't want to get...
They don't have heaters?
No.
Can work on that.
Great fishing.
The Army Corps of Engineers, put them on that.
We'll get them on that. Great show today, Lee. Lots of interesting guests this morning. And first up, I'm thrilled to have Penny Connor with us from the Georgia Department of Community Health. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show, Penny.
Thank you.
So, Penny, we've got some information coming our way, it sounds like, on immunizations.
Well, I think today people, because we've done such a good job in vaccination immunization, but the truth is vaccine-preventable diseases haven't gone away. And basically, we just want to remind people that they still need to get their vaccines. We're in the midst of flu season, but there's other adult vaccines that they need to get. In this day of when people can travel across the globe in a day, we can see how easy it is for vaccine-preventable diseases to spread.
No doubt. Now, we always think about vaccines when we think about children. Talk a little bit about adults. I mean, is it only when we are traveling outside the country that we need to have these vaccines, or can you speak to that a little bit?
Well, traditionally, you're right. Vaccines have been associated with protecting young children. But far too many of our adults are becoming immune suppressed and everything and die each year from these diseases. So, no, it's not just for those who travel. It's for every adult. And I think it's the situation where people aren't aware of the vaccines that they need.
What are the ones that we need as you are an adult?
As an adult, obviously you're going to need an annual flu shot, over 65 pneumonia.
You think a flu shot, that's a mandatory thing in your mind?
I do.
Without question.
Without question.
Speak to that a little bit as it relates to businesses, because I think it's really important for businesses just to keep everybody healthy and people come to work when they're sick. Talk a little bit about the loss of productivity when people don't get flu shots and have the flu.
Well, interesting enough, obviously there's a lot of survey and people listen to data. The CDC reports that there's an average of 36,000 deaths each year from influenza. Pretty substantial. And over that, there's over 200,000 hospitalizations that occur. The combination of influenza and pneumonia, which is a complication, account for over 63,000 deaths. It's not something that's going away. It's something that we need to be more prepared for. But if you talk about the impact of businesses, they say that the overall national burden on influenza attributable illnesses, this is for adults over the age of 18, is going to be somewhere around $83 billion.
Wow.
Interesting enough, a lot of that is going to be direct cost, 8.7 in hospitals, visits, and then the indirect would be those loss of venue where you're actually at work.
And how can people get these vaccinations? Do they have to go to their doctor or are there other spots?
Well, I'm sure that we're a lot more aware now. You can get vaccines at pharmacies. You'll see clinics and malls. Your healthcare providers can be in a variety of different places. Obviously, your private physician. But our public health departments, you can get your vaccines there.
And the flu shots? What's the difference between the flu shot and the mist?
There's two different ways that you can get your flu vaccine, and one of them is the flu shot. That's available for anybody. And now this is the first year that the CDC has had a universal, say, anybody over the age of 6 months, if they're healthy and don't have any contraindications, can get the flu shot. But that's just, and one of the things I'd like to mention is that that's made from inactivated, killed dead virus, so you can't get the flu from the flu shot.
Okay.
The flu, you talk about the flu mist, that's what they call the nasal. That's available for people 2 to 49 years of old who are well. This is not for pregnant people. And it's basically, like you say, it's given per mist up each nostril.
That's what I got, Lee.
You got the mist?
Yeah, I'm kind of a
wimp. Did it make you, like, sneeze?
No, and it was so uneventful. I don't know what I was expecting, but I got it for the first time this year because my kids got it, so I lined up with them, and and it was so easy, just in the nostril, and, you know, you sniffed a little, and it sure did beat the shot. I'm not encouraging all of our listeners to go out and ask for the mist, but if you're like me and you're afraid of needles, it's no excuse to not get the flu vaccine this year.
And so now the flu vaccine, you said, is the... the old flu of last year? Like, what flu are they giving you? Because, like, how can they make it be the next flu?
Well, interesting enough, the World Health Organization gets together with CDC, and then they look at the viruses that are going around, you know, the world. And last year, we are having in our component, we have what's called a trivalent. So there's three parts. There's two influenza A's and a B, and one of those influenza A's is the H1N1.
Okay, so that's part of actually part of this year's flu shot.
It is, because it's been identified that flu is, or virus is still traveling around in the U.S.
But like last year, that was a separate.
Correct.
Right. So then this year, it's just integrated in the normal flu shot.
Well, it was separate last year, Lee, because it was identified after the vaccine had been formulated.
Is that the case though? Like, so is this protecting you from last year's stuff? And there's like mutations of this stuff that isn't being solved by this vaccine?
Well, and that's why the flu season is so unpredictable, because we, you know, it's sort of a we go out and try to do the best we can in identifying those. You never know if you get all of them.
Right.
But yeah, there are some, whatever flu viruses are floating around. That's what they try to identify. And as they say, they give it their best shot.
Right.
I am getting the giggles, Lee. You're so funny. So I'm getting last year's flu and
yeah.
shot.
Well, it is last year's. That's where they get it from.
Well, they identified that's still available. I mean, that's still floating around.
Right.
So water protect you.
And I know in years past there's been a shortage. Do we anticipate that this year? Should we get it now?
It's like there's not a shortage. So everybody should go to their doctor, clinic, pharmacy, healthcare, public health, and get their vaccine.
And there's no difference, you said, in like the quality of the vaccine going to the drugstore than your doctor. They all have the same vaccine.
All have the same vaccine.
That's good to know, because I have kind of wondered about that a little bit. What talk a little bit more about adults and why they need to be immunized. I know you've addressed that once, but how often are these immunizations necessary? Are there some that expire?
Are you talking about just the flu or the other immunizations?
Other immunizations, just in general, because I know, like, when you take kids, they get the schedule of shots, but I don't think I've had any shots in a long time.
And that's true. I think a lot of it is, we say it's just ignorance. People don't know that they need to get shots. One is that we know every 10 years we should go get a tetanus. Well, what we identified in 2005 is that our immunity wanes against pertussis. We've been hearing a lot in California about the whooping cough or pertussis. Well, what we adults need to get here is, instead of a tetanus shot, they need to get a Tdap, which is your tetanus, diphtheria, and pertussis component.
Mm-hmm.
And you should, that's a one-time booster. You mentioned, should we get one? Every adult should get one of those. One of the reasons is that we identified elsewhere is that our children, our infants, don't get it until they're 2 months old. And then they get a series of five, but until they had their third vaccine in a series, they're really not protected. So we need to do what we call herd immunity and protect these young kids by going ahead as adolescents and adults and getting a Tdap.
Were there any immunizations that we had as kids that they thought, oh, this will be your lifetime, don't worry about it, that in reality they're like, you know, maybe when you're in your 40s you should get some more protection?
Additional ones? Well, they've identified those who haven't, if you've been born, I'm looking around the room, after 1957, you need to make sure that you've had MMR, the measles, mumps, and rubella, and or that you've had, if you haven't had chicken pox, that you get the varicella. Obviously, we hear a lot about zoster after the age of 60 for shingles, and then we mentioned the pneumonia.
The shingles, is there a vaccine for that now?
There is, but it's only available for those 60 or older.
Okay.
And that is paid by Medicare Part D.
Oh, that would be a good one to get, no doubt.
Yeah, you don't want that.
No. only shingles I want are on my roof.
Exactly.
No doubt. Well, Penny, any final thoughts for our listeners? Great information, and absolutely encouraging those to go, those that are listening, to go out and get the flu vaccine.
Well, what I'd like to mention is that we do have our National Influenza Vaccination Week, which is coming up December 5th through 11th, with December the 8th being Employee Health Day. Be a great time to let your employees go and get a flu shot. And just remember to begin the conversation with your health care provider about what vaccines, immunizations you do need.
Excellent. Thanks for being our guest this morning.
Thank you.
Lee, I think I do need to ask my doctor about that, because, like, the tetanus, I mean,
yeah,
you usually don't think about that until you stepped on a rusty nail.
Right.
And then you go, ooh, I hope I have a tetanus.
And then you go get one.
Yeah, no doubt. Great information. And I did get that missed, and it was so easy and non-eventful. And I'm glad to know now I got last year's flu.
See, you're welcome.
Yeah, you're very funny. And H1N1, gosh, last year everybody was all worried about that. We had a guest come on and talk about it. This year it sounds
like... Now they just throw it in.
Throw it in for free. All one big ball of wax. Our next guest this morning, Lee, it's right up your alley because you're all about health and wellness when it comes to kids. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show, Brian from Healthy Kids Across America. Welcome.
Thank you, Amy. I appreciate it.
Tell us about Healthy Kids and how it started.
Okay, sure. Healthy Kids Across America is a new 501c3 foundation in which our mission is to take the healthy eating, regular physical exercise, and self-esteem development message to kids across the country. In the past, I've done a lot of mobile marketing tours helping to promote brands and taking brands to grocery stores at a special events. And parallel to that, I've gone to my kids' school for years and seen how much the kids in schools need to learn the message about healthy eating and regular exercise. So we're taking a field trip on wheels to the kids across the country to teach them this.
It's a great idea.
Thanks.
So yeah. What happens on this field trip?
Okay, well, we've got a 45-foot bus that we're taking to schools. We get approval from the PTAs and the principals, and we schedule to come in and advance. We'll develop a curriculum that we've put together with Let's Move from Michelle Obama and from the American Diabetes Association, Heart Association, and My Pyramid for Kids. And we put a curriculum together, and then we bring this interactive experience to the kids at their schools, teaching them about how to read labels, the difference between high fructose corn syrup and natural sugar, right, and just eating healthy, and the importance of regular physical exercise on their body.
Now, what have you learned from the kids? Like, how savvy are they?
The kids are amazing with what they know. One of our board members, Megan McCarthy, has been going to a couple of schools in the state, the Douglasville School District, and teaching them about healthy eating. The curriculum she's developed for them is similar to one that she puts together at Whole Foods or Cook's Warehouse. And the message coming back from the kids is that they want to eat healthy. They just want to know what it is that they can eat to give them the energy to
that they need, right?
Exactly.
And kids really do like to read the labels. It empowers them.
Oh, it's so true, you know, because if they can see what value they can get from a granola bar as opposed to a donut, and they know it's going to be energy for them in the school, in the classroom, and then after school. These kids are so involved and active with sports, and they just want to maximize the energy. It's like food as fuel for your body.
Mm-hmm. And it's great to get them started on that when they're young. Every once in a while, my kids will come home from school. Yesterday, I thought I did a really good job. I packed them sushi for lunch. But then my daughter came home, and she's like, this tangerine juice is 36 grams of sugar or whatever. She goes, you might as well pack me a soda, which is interesting because I thought I was doing something good, giving
right.
them juice, but... Not
you
got to so
watch
much.
The juices.
Yeah, a lot of sugar.
It's true.
A lot
it's
of
true.
Sugar. So Michelle Obama, her movement to bring health and wellness to kids, how has that affected your company?
It's just been terrific. The two are playing off each other. We actually started Healthy Kids Across America in its formative stages about 2 years ago, and we put together a terrific board with doctors and educators and chefs. And just the notoriety that Michelle Obama has brought to the next Let's Move across the country is just incredible because people are more aware. For example, about 25 million kids, more than 33% of the country's children and adolescents are at risk of becoming obese or getting diabetes. And I think what Michelle's doing, what Jamie Oliver and others have been doing in the media has just been helping to raise the awareness in corporate America, which is the next step to get some of the funding to bring programs to the kids across the country.
Are you finding that corporations are embracing this? Or
they certainly are. I think companies like Coca-Cola that has so many healthy brands like Minute Maid and Dasani Water are looking at this. Yogurt companies like Stonyfield Farms and others are identifying how can we help the kids to eat healthier.
Right, and to make the right choices.
Correct, because that's it. It's a choice every day what to eat from the refrigerator or for the vending machines at schools.
For sure. Now, you mentioned chefs. What part will they have on the field trip or your show out on the road?
Well, there's two things going on right now. There's about 60 chefs in Georgia that are going out to schools and teaching the kids and teaching the lunch ladies, if you will. Mary Moore from Cook's Warehouse has this program in which she's bringing lunch ladies into her store, teaching them about...
Are they really only ladies?
Primarily. There's lunch there's lunch guys, too. I guess it's just the terminology.
I didn't know if that was like, you know, I know when I was a kid there were always lunch ladies, but I didn't know if that was just, you know, is that really real? Like, is it like 99%?
I'd say women? High 90s, yes. But more and more, you've got these great chefs that are out there that are really taking the initiative, like Jamie Oliver, with what he's doing about revamping what kids are eating. And it's a challenge because these lunch ladies are terrific. They want to teach kids how to eat well. They want to put as many high nutritious items on the menu.
But aren't they limited by kind of the rules and the regulations with the, like I know in the Jamie Oliver show that was shocking to me that a potato was, you know, carried as much weight as a vegetable as broccoli. And that means they could pile up a, you know, a big pile of French fries and then check off the vegetable box.
Their hands are tied in some cases based upon what's available from the federal government and the dollars per child that they're able to feed. So that's a hurdle that we're trying to bring to Congress's awareness and to change things through the Senate and the House. And with Michelle Obama and her campaign to teach healthy
eating, she might have an in there.
I think she's got a little bit of leverage. That's correct.
Just a little. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious. So when Mary brings the lunch lady in, what do they do? What does that look like?
It's awesome. What she's doing is she's identifying what the healthiest ingredients are and also aware of what the budget constraints are that these lunch ladies have and just teaching them about what tastes good and what kids will eat and identifying just the best way to use what they currently have, the resources at hand to help feed the kids in a healthy manner.
So is that part of your mission of your organization, is to educate lunch ladies?
It's a secondary mission. Really what we're trying to do and what we'll be doing with the Healthy Kids Across America field trip on wheels is much like the Iron Chef competition. We're going to be bringing the lunch ladies, the managers from the cafeterias, out and partner with one of our guest chefs, whether it's Megan McCarthy, whether it's Ellie Krieger, Rachel Ray. We've talked with so many chefs, and they're so enthusiastic about getting involved and going out to the schools and having this competition where you'll have kids, celebrity chefs, and the lunch ladies all competing and identifying what it is that's healthy and how to cook it when they go home.
What fun.
But the premise is to take the existing food that they already have and then make it in a more nutritious manner?
That's part of it. And then secondarily, we're talking with Whole Foods and others about wouldn't it be great if we could get a salad bar in every school across the country with your greens, your superfoods, yogurt, nuts, etc., and have it as an alternative to the slice of pizza or the hamburger.
It's the classic Salisbury steak. That's what's doing us all in.
It is.
And the tater tots. Anybody that watched Glee last night, they removed the tater tots from the cafeteria, and it was a huge deal.
Yeah, I'm sure it was.
I'm sorry.
No, they were having tater tots on the black market.
Black market.
Yeah, black market tots. That's good. But it is so true because there are so many healthy choices, and it does start when they're young. You mentioned something about athletes. Do you have athletes that are also part of this program?
That's correct. I love what the NFL is doing with helping to curb obesity, and we're also talking with several athletes. We're talking with Cal Ripken's people about having him go out and speak to the kids. Shaquille O'Neal is up in Boston now and going to the Boston schools. John Smoltz, as you know, is here in Atlanta. Right. And so we feel that this healthy mind, body, soul initiative is really what needs to take place. So we're having the athletes go out to the schools as a role model and encouraging the kids to be actively involved with sports, with even just walking or biking or mountain climbing or hiking. So having the athletes go out, having the chefs go out, and then we've also contacted Vic Conant from the Nightingale Conant Corporation. He has a list of writers and speakers that are writing books and teaching kids about healthy self-esteem. And really, this is one of my personal components of the favorite components of the program, is that if kids are feeling good about themselves, if they're active, then their self-esteem will develop and grow to a level that they're able to make right choices, mm-hmm. and that's just going to serve them well for the rest of their lives.
That is so true. So people that are listening and that might be affiliated with a corporation or a company that want to help, how can they get involved and help you with your mission?
Okay, sure. Well, first of all, they can go to our website, which is healthykidsacrossamerica.org, and express any interest that they want to get involved. A program like this, obviously putting a bus on the road and putting a crew together, coordinating with chefs and athletes, does cost a lot of money. So if there's companies out there that want to participate, they certainly can email me at Brian Bresnahan or bbresnahan@healthykids.org, or they can look at our website. And there's so many ways for healthy brands, healthy companies to get involved. It's like this major groundswell of initiative. I think I look at it much like what the Komen Foundation has done to help with breast cancer, or what the smoking cessation movement was 20 years ago to curb the amount of people that smoked. I think what we're seeing right now is we've identified this national epidemic of diabetes and obesity, and I think corporations, wellness facilities, educators are all really cajoling at the same time to identify how can we get involved and help out, and there's so many things that corporate America can do with the funding and with programs at their companies to have wellness seminars for the parents and managers to go home and teach their kids.
That's great. Great stuff.
Right.
Give us the website one more time so our listeners can visit that.
Okay, it's healthyeating.org, and my email address is bbresnahan@healthy.org.
Back
we,
up.
We know somebody else with a healthy eating website. It's healthykidsacrossamerica.org is the website, and my email address is bbresnahan@healthykidsacrossamerica.org.
Excellent. Thanks so much for being our guest today.
Thank you so much.
Great information, and it's so true because they, I don't know about Max, but when I grocery shop with my kids, they do look at the labels. And it's usually the salt.
We're at the
sugar.
Junk food. The chips, that's the labels we look at.
Just wait till he has health class at school.
Yeah.
That changes it all, definitely. When they do the project where they have to take something and measure out the sugar, and you realize that the thing of Frappuccino has like the sugar inside the bottle is crazy. It makes you really think about what you're eating. Our next guest this morning is also interested in having healthy folks across America, I'm sure. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show, Mickey Douglas.
Thanks so much.
Mickey is with LifeForce Nutritional Lifestyle, and we'd love to know about your company and how you started it.
Well, I really started the LifeForce program based on my own needs. I come from a long career in the spa and wellness industries. I knew how to take care of my skin, but I could never really find a solution, a permanent solution to my weight issues. Yo-yo dieting was, you know, a major issue in my life, as it is for most women. After years of struggling with my own weight, dealing with major illnesses like asthma, severe migraine headaches, very strange skin disorders and rashes that would just come out of nowhere. And I was always hungry. You know, I was on every Frankenfood diet that I could think of. I tried Nutrisystem and Jenny Craig and the Weight Watchers. I tried all of the traditional weight loss routes and following, you know, the FDA guides for the food pyramid. It just wasn't working. And so I really decided to start taking a deeper look at exactly what was going on. And I found some truths that were both freeing but also very disturbing. And I really found out that the food industry, the FDA, the USDA, the special interest groups that are out there protecting these companies, the dairy and meat associations, they are not our friends. They are not concerned about our health in any shape, form, or fashion in any way. And so I really started looking into holistic alternatives. And the result was, 65 pounds of weight loss and freedom from, yo-yo dieting. And I started reading books like Skinny Bitch, which really is, ultimately was the catalyst for starting all of this. It changed my life. There was a lot of information in that book that I did not agree with. So I started looking deeper into ancient principles like food combining and pH balance, the acid-alkaline balance, is very important. And when I started combining all of those things together is really ultimately when I lost a lot of weight. All of my health problems subsided. Just to give you an example, I lost 32 pounds in the first month. I mean, literally the weight just fell off. And I have found that when the body is in balance, that is true for anybody.
Now, can you talk us through like your normal eating day?
Sure. I get up in the morning and I have 4 to 6 ounces of organic grapefruit juice.
So you measure that?
I do. So it's important not to have a lot of juice in your diet, as you were talking to Brian about. Juice is very high in sugar. When you remove the fiber from fruit, there's really no point in eating the fruit. The fiber and the nutrients is in the pulp.
So you juice the grapefruit? That's how you get your juice?
I juice it, or you can also buy it at Whole Foods. They have a super fresh squeezed grapefruit juice that they make. And grapefruit is very alkaline. It may seem acidic, but it's actually very alkaline, and it's also very fat-burning. You want to drink that on an empty stomach. I take my liquid vitamins, and then I eat a sprouted grain muffin. Traditional grains are very acidic in the body and cause a lot of disease and toxicity issues that ultimately prevent weight loss. So I only eat sprouted grain products from Food for Life. Amazing. Pitas, muffins, bread. There is a replacement for everything that is in your life that's unhealthy, that's junk food.
So you have a replacement for Doritos?
Yes, actually, there is a replacement for Doritos.
That's all about the crunch, Lee. That's a texture thing. But don't you find that with foods in general, the foods you crave are usually because of the texture, not necessarily the flavor.
Exactly. And I think a lot of people are afraid to go on some type of major diet because they know that they're going to be tortured. They're going to be hungry. They're going to be eating salads and cold food all of the time. And that's not the case. With my program, I show you ways to clean up everything, how to clean up your lasagna, your macaroni and cheese, but also integrate more fruits and vegetables in hot casseroles, soups, hot salads, things that really taste very good. And of course, I put garlic and onions in everything, and that makes everything taste better.
Absolutely. Now, why is organic so important?
Organic is really, really important for a number of different reasons. I think that a lot of people don't understand that the amount of pesticides that are in the food are causing a lot of the health issues that they're having. So when you're buying organic fruits and vegetables, first of all, you're supporting a sustainable system. You know, genetically modified fruits and vegetables are not sustainable. They do not produce harvest seed for the farmers to use the next year. The farmers get trapped in cycles of purchasing seeds and fertilizers from the government, and it depletes the soil. So it's really important to buy organic, not just in your fruits and vegetables, but in your grains, in your spices. The few extra dollars that you're going to be spending at the grocery store, that's money that is well worth it, because otherwise you're just going to be spending money on higher health insurance, prescriptions, doctor's visits, and a lot of people have a misconception that buying organic food is more expensive, but actually what's more expensive is your rising health care costs.
Now, it seems like they put organic on every label, like there's organic cosmetics, you know, is it like where do you draw the line of organic?
Do you use those?
Look, there's organic cigarettes.
Oh, gross.
There are.
There's organic vodka. I mean, you
right.
do see organic.
So, like, is it just fruits and vegetables? Is that where you should concern yourself with organic, or do you think just across the board?
I think across the board. I mean, my personal philosophy is if it's not organic and it wasn't produced by nature in a natural manner, I don't want it in my body.
So organic cigarettes. If you're going to smoke,
if you're gonna
organic
smoke,
cigarette
well,
is better than a regular cigarette.
That is definitely propaganda, I would say, at its finest. So I would not. There is no such thing as a healthy cigarette.
But it's organic. It's less pesticides.
Well, there's probably less pesticides in the tobacco, but, you know.
It's still tobacco, Lee.
Yeah, there's another 20,000 chemicals like benzene and styrene and nicotine, you know, that are highly addictive substances.
So talk a little bit about pH. You mentioned that earlier. How does that affect our weight loss efforts?
Well, I think it's really important to understand the acid-alkaline balance within the body. When you have a high acidic environment, typically you're going to have a number of different diseases present, and those are pretty common ailments that we as Americans have allowed ourselves to just put up with as a part of daily life. You don't have to be tortured with, you know, constipation, IBS, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and unfortunately a lot of these inflammatory diseases often lead to, you know, worse things like cancer, colon cancer, for example, prostate cancer, breast cancer. When you have a high acidic environment in the body, inflammation in the body, you're going to eventually, everyone has cancer cells in them, by the way. It's just a matter of, are they going to become active, and what are you doing to prevent those cells from growing?
Makes sense to me.
So, I mean, that's...
She should write a book.
Yeah.
I am writing a book.
There you go. Yeah. I'm glad Marna's here.
Yeah, no doubt. No, you definitely should write a book.
I mean, it's kind of like, you know, I tell people, I mean, our bodies are machines. And so imagine if you put the wrong type of fuel in your car. It's not going to function properly, and it's eventually going to break down. If you put jet fuel in a car, you're not going to get very far. And so, unfortunately, I think a lot of people, I feel that Americans have been brainwashed by these special interest groups to eat certain foods because it maximizes their profit at the expense of our health and our children's health.
Do you eat red meat?
I do not.
You do not?
I'm a vegan.
Okay. I had to ask that question because there's organic beef and stuff. And
well, and I do have a few clients that occasionally, at least for the first, you know, say 3 to 6 months, they really just still want to have that animal protein in their diet. I think that people don't really know where their meat is coming from. I think if they did know where it was coming from, I assure you they would not want to eat it. The picture of the beautiful farm that you see on TV is all a marketing campaign. These animals are coming from what are called CAFOs, which are centralized animal feeding operations. They're not even allowed by the government to call themselves farms anymore. They live knee-deep in their own manure. They are sick, diseased, tortured, exhausted, over-medicated animals. And unfortunately, when you eat those things, you then also become that way. And that is why obesity and disease is so rampant in America, because you are what you eat, truly.
That's why people want my chicken's eggs. I have
exactly.
hens, and I do feed them organically. I mean, they eat everything we eat plus organic feed.
That's amazing.
And the eggs are so much better, and they're so much different.
Yeah, and that's what I tell people. If you're going to eat animal protein, eat, you know, it's so important to buy organic dairy, organic milk, organic eggs, and grass-fed beef that you can verify is coming from a farmer that have ethical practices.
Okay, I hope my husband's listening because I've been really telling him I want a cow. We need our own milk. I need to be feeding this cow.
That's right. You got to have a closed system there.
Well, we could have an entire radio show about milk. Don't get me started about milk. Yeah, I mean, you know, and unfortunately, we are the only species that drinks another species' milk. Milk is for babies.
Right.
Milk is a maternal fluid designed to nourish a child of that species. And beyond babyhood, there's no need to drink milk. And there's a number of studies that show that, unfortunately, today's milk is nothing but it's a bacterial and chemical cocktail. It's filled with hormones, pesticides, antibiotics, very frightening bacteria. These animals are exhausted. They stay pregnant 24/7. They never get a break. The average cow 50 years ago was producing about 3,000 pounds of milk. The average cow today is producing 50,000 pounds of milk.
That's a lot of milk.
Yeah, and the only way they can do that is to stay on steroids and growth hormones and stay pregnant all of the time.
nasty.
It is nasty.
I think I'm going to go eat an apple, an organic apple.
So, I mean, there's alternative to that, and that's what I show people. You know, you can have, you know, milk and cereal. You can have milk and cookies, but there are non-acidic, organic varieties of these foods. My children, my youngest child, he's almost four. He's never had a drop of milk in his life. There's no need for him to drink it. I breastfed him, and then from that point, he drinks water. He does have some organic vegetable juices, but almond milk, unsweetened almond milk, is nature's gift.
Yeah, almond milk is very good. We've had somebody on the show that makes
ice cream guy.
Yeah, they make ice cream from almond milk.
Yeah, and you actually can buy almond milk ice cream in the store, and it's sweetened with agave syrup or evaporated cane juice, which is a much healthier alternative to genetically modified high fructose corn syrup and all of the sugars that, you know, cause diabetes and cancers.
So you're giving us all of your secrets, but what if someone's listening and they want to know more and want to know about your services? How can they engage you?
Well, they can find me on my website. I also have a blog on blogger.com. My website is iwantlifeforce.com. They can also email me at Mickey, M-I-K-K-I, at iwantlifeforce.com. I do have a social media presence on Twitter. It's under Lifeforce Nut. And Facebook, which is the page is titled Life Force Nutritional Lifestyle, and they can just find me on Facebook or email me.
So if somebody doesn't live in Atlanta, that shouldn't limit them to reaching out.
Absolutely. I mean, I do provide a number of different, you know, one-on-one coaching services for anyone here in Atlanta locally, cooking classes, menu planning. I'm going to be partnering with a dear colleague of mine at Shape Medical Wellness. We're going to be really gearing up for the new year to roll out a series of holistic and wellness events to really start educating people about proper nutrition and holistic alternatives. So, you know, all they really have to do is just reach out to me. I do have a booklet that they can purchase that gives them the basic information. And I have some clients that live out of state that I do phone consultations for as well.
Okay, great. And we're waiting for that book. Sounds like you've read all of them and you've kind of compiled the best of the best in what you teach.
That's exactly what I've done. And I think that there's a lot of information out there. It's very confusing. But when you combine, you know, the three principles of Life Force, which are, you know, clean eating, obviously that means organic, balancing your pH, and food combining, I think a lot of people really don't understand the benefit of properly combining their food for proper digestion. You know, there are certain enzymes and acids in the body that are designed to break down certain components of proteins and carbohydrates. And so when you combine those together, your body gets confused, the food ferments, and that's what causes acid indigestion and acid reflux, which is one of the number one issues plaguing Americans. Prilosec and Prevacid are the number one selling drugs of all time. Billions of dollars have been grossed, which is kind of funny because my mom just stopped taking that. Because one of the side effects is acid reflux.
Oh, boy.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I love those disclaimers on all the medication.
Right. It's opposite of what you're using it for.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, and with holistic nutrition, it's really important to dissect the label. Like you said, you were talking with Brian earlier, it's very important to read the label and engage your children in these terms, high fructose corn syrup, hydrogenated oils. A lot of parents think that, you know, I see these moms at the soccer field or at the baseball field, and, you know, they've always got a Gatorade for their child. They don't understand that Gatorade is colored with lead. And unfortunately, we have a lot, the neurological disorders in children are epidemic proportions at this point. Not only obesity, but ADHD and autism. And, you know, you are what you eat. If you're not providing the brain and the body, a developing child, with nutrients, the brain is not going to develop properly. And that's evident in the frightening statistics of neurological disorders in our children.
Wow. And how that about Gatorade? That's one of the few drinks I actually like.
Well, anything that's colored blue, there is no natural blue in nature other than a blueberry, and that's actually purple. So if you look at all of these fluorescent colored gums and drinks, they're all colored with FD&C. You know, I mean, if you're reading a label and the list of ingredients is longer than a grocery list for a family of 20, you probably shouldn't eat it. You know, that's a general rule of thumb. And, you know, FD&C, lead, dyes, there's actually arsenic in a lot of things that, you know, heavy metal toxicity in a lot of these coloring agents are causing a lot of, you know, neurological disorders in adults as well. So, you know, be leery of the soda, juice, Gatorade aisle.
Okay. I got to really revamp my shopping now. Isn't that something when you think you're doing something good?
Look, there's always something.
Yeah, that's
right. I offer grocery store tours. I actually meet moms and women at the grocery store, and we go by everything line by line, item by item. So
that's a great idea. Great idea. I'm just making healthy choices.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much for being with us today, Mickey, and give us the website one more time so folks know how they can reach you.
Sure. It's iwantlifeforce.com.
I can't believe you lost that much weight. I mean, you look fabulous. Do you ever look at the before pictures and go,
yeah, you have the fat pictures somewhere?
I do have the fat pictures, and they're buried deep in a computer in a password-protected folder.
There's no before and after on your website?
No, unfortunately, I know at some point, in developing the video series and the DVDs and the presentations that I'm developing, I'm going to have to release those pictures. Maybe if I can find one that I'm not completely disgusted by, I might, but... I'm trying not to look back. I'm trying to look forward.
Great. That's wonderful. Great information for our listeners. I know I'm going to check out the website.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
I almost feel like we're having our New Year's resolution show a little early.
Really? That's what it sounds
like.
We're
so on top of it here at the Atlanta Business Radio Show. Our next guest this morning is here to tell you how you can get in shape. Welcome, Tracy. Tell us all about your boot camp.
Hi, my name is Tracy Palfrey. I'm a personal trainer at the Concourse Athletic Club, and I've been teaching boot camp since 2002. So we came at a time that it was more of a drill sergeant kind of abuse, if you may, torture session. And what I've noticed over the years is that a lot of injuries start to occur either the second or third week of camp, and the how unaware people are about their bodies when they're exercising. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is going to be a problem. I don't want to be labeled the trainer that like hurt everybody across Atlanta.
It's not good for business.
No.
Half your class is injured.
Exactly. So I came up with a unconventional concept. And what I did was I began to break down the boot camp in phases. And so it gave people an opportunity to build up what would be their weakness and allow them to be more successful over the course of time, also giving them a variety and consistency in their exercise program, actually teaching them what to do and not just hurling demands at them. So that way they were able to continue working out in a positive way once we were done with class. So the basic concept of the boot camp I came up with is five phases. And these five phases represent different exercise components, if you will. For example, phase one would be cardio endurance, and that's where I would focus on building up your cardiorespiratory capabilities over the course of 4 weeks. What that translates into is I'm training your heart. So if you can't maintain a heart, a heart rate of 145 to 155 during a normal workout.
For how long do you have to maintain that?
Oh, wow.
Like a minute?
Yeah, at least a minute. Yeah. And it was amazing to me. People couldn't maintain that for 30 seconds.
Right.
And I was like, holy cow. So I had to kind of back up and change gears. And I found that, you know, these people are more successful over time and I have a higher rate of retention in my boot camp. So what happens is now we work phase one, all cardio, which allows you to learn how to control your body. Because like I said,
But is cardio mean running or you're having them do a whole bunch of stuff?
It's all kinds of stuff. It's
like
all
what?
Kind of, for example, you would do 60 seconds of push-ups, flip over, and do 30 seconds of sit-ups. Your heart rate will fly through the roof just with that. Because your body has to respond quickly to what's going on. So I came up with cardiovascular exercises to spike your heart rate and teach you how to maintain that during this time.
Right.
And so after that, we would go into weight training. Then we'll go into core and functional training.
Is this all outside or is it in the weight area?
Well, this is the luxury of the concourse. It's that we have a fabulous facility that allows us to be indoors. And that's why I only teach boot camp in the winter, because that's the time that people just won't move.
Right.
So now I offer both people who train outdoors an opportunity to come inside and do something and the ones who, you know, will not train in the wintertime an opportunity to come inside and do something.
Right.
So it's a great, great program. I've had tremendous success. My injury prevention rate has like shot through the roof. A lot of people are really starting to come out.
And they're getting good results?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've had one lady lose 27 pounds in, you know, over the course of 6 weeks.
Wow.
And I wanted to explode out of my seat when Mickey was talking, because a lot of people are just not aware of what's really happening to their body while they're working out,
right,
as well as eating. And it's so important.
Have you ever done a boot camp, Amy?
Have I?
Yeah.
Actually, when 10 years ago and 15 pounds ago, I used to teach a boot camp. That's why I'm sitting here so wide-eyed. And it's hard to get people engaged in exercise sometimes, so I taught adult recess. Just anything to make exercise fun and get people moving. But, I kind of liked yelling at people, though.
It's good for the teacher,
Come
right?
on, 10 well, more. No, what do you mean you're done? Yeah, it was.
I've been doing this for so long. I have a reputation of being like a someone who's pretty mean. Like, you know, I pretty much maximize my mommy stare. And I don't have, I'm a woman of few words. You know, I pretty much have to say, look, this is what you're going to do. And they're like, okay, Tracy, there's, you know, very little resistance.
How many people are in a class?
I won't go over 10. That's because I feel like I need to pay attention to what's going on. And I am able to, over the years of doing group training, able to really focus on, you know, maximum 10 people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you leave my boot camp, you're going to leave with more than just, I lost, you know, weight. That's a byproduct. That's going to happen anyway. Mm-hmm. Anything you do consistently over time, and if you modify your nutritional intake, you're going to see some level of results. However, are you able to translate that into your lifestyle? Mm-hmm. And see, that's our niche. That's where we come in, is I'm, you know, I'm big on educating you. And everything that I teach you, you're able to go on and do yourself.
Is this like a once a week, twice a week? How often do you?
This is twice a week, and it's 8 sessions a month. And here's my theory behind that. I've noticed when we do 3 or 5 days, one, people fall off.
Right.
They're not as consistent. Two, it doesn't allow your body proper time to recover.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're over 35, or especially women have had children, that is the secret. You have to allow yourself time to recover in between your sessions, because mm-hmm. it's so intense.
So when you say recover, does that mean do nothing or do less?
No, no, when I say recover, you're not exercising every day. For example, our class is Tuesday, Thursday. So I would say, okay, on Monday, Wednesday, I need you to do 30 to 45 minutes of moderate cardio, active recovery, so to speak.
Does moderate cardio mean walking, or does it mean running?
Walking with your dog, you know, pushing a stroller, you know, walking on a treadmill, something that will raise your heart rate above normal. That is active recovery. That's proven to be more positive for your body than just like beating it up. Unless you play for the Falcons,
there's no reason.
There's really no, there is no, you know, supporting data out there that says this is the proper way to train. Mm-hmm. You know, we've had such an exorbitant rate of injuries over the last 10 years. I mean, I've been a trainer for 15 years, and I've seen, I mean, I'm fixing people on a daily basis.
Yeah.
It's pretty scary.
And you have a degree in this, right? You're not, you just didn't, you know, take a class last weekend and now you're ready to go.
I'm not a drive-through trainer, and there are those that are, and those are the people that get certified within 48 hours. Be leery of that, too. Actually, I was pre-med. I went to University of Florida. I was actually going to be a physician. And I just got so sick on the way of doing my bachelor's degree and everything of, you know, no disrespect to doctors, I still love y'all, but it's like, you know, they're going to do what they're taught. No one is being, practicing preventive care.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just got to the point where I was like, forget it. I'm not going to med school. I'm just going to go be a wellness coach and teach people what it is that's really going on with their body and prevent the onset of what's already happening.
How did you get to Atlanta from Gainesville?
Funny story about that. I was a professional fitness competitor for 8 years prior to me having my daughter.
So after college, you became a...
Yeah, I started competing in an organization called Fitness America. Those are the chicks that do like one-arm push-ups and flips.
So you can do one-arm push-ups
and
flips?
I can do a one-arm push-up, Lee, right now.
Maybe after the show.
Yeah.
See that.
But that's how I ended up. I was doing a competition in Atlanta.
Uh-huh.
And I just fell in love with the city. And I was like, all right, when I'm done, when I graduate, here I come. And that's exactly what happened. And I walked through the doors of the Concourse Athletic Club, and I haven't looked back.
That's
so you
great.
Like it there?
Good, love it.
Good club?
Yeah. Great, great, great place to be.
What are some of the things at the Concourse that make it different than the other gyms?
Well, aside from our fabulous personal training staff, because we're all degreed. You know, that's
really? Is that true?
Absolutely.
Every trainer there is
every
degreed?
Trainer
so
is
they
degreed.
Don't have the weekend certification.
No, and then
we have
quality certificate. You have to have a certain certification to even get a job interview at the Concourse. Aside from personal training, our spa services are really, you know, they're really up to par. Our group exercise, my gosh, I mean, that is our group exercise, which is all the kickboxing and
right.
step classes. That's amazing. You know, we just have a great group of people.
And you've been in a few gyms in your life.
I have managed, been a part of, been associated with quite a few. And I must say, I am spoiled by the concourse. You know, I actually left for like 30 seconds and came back because I came to my senses. But the concourse, it's one in a million, definitely.
Do they have a website?
Yeah, it's Wellbridge.com, which is our overall managing company. And you go to Wellbridge.com, you can find Concourse.
Right, and Concourse Club, I think, also.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah, yeah, it's beautiful. If folks haven't been there in a while, you guys have got a state-of-the-art facility.
We do, and that's, you know, a lot of people don't realize that we even offer boot camp classes there because they just think it's just one-on-one personal training. No, there's so many facets to our personal training staff, and there's so many programs. There's one out there for you. You just got to, you know, get to us, and we will take care of you. We'll do the rest.
So you have any openings right now, or you're full?
Yes. The second phase is full now, but the next one starts January 7th.
Perfect timing.
Yeah.
Perfect timing.
And, yeah, it starts January 7th. And, again, if you go to our website, it has all the dates on there. Mm-hmm. And, again, each one is 4 weeks long. And if you miss, it's a series. But if you miss, it's okay.
Because so you can jump in.
Absolutely. I do write the program so you're able to adjust.
Great.
Excellent. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Great information. And I think this show is perfectly placed.
See
people
that?
Need to start thinking about their New Year's resolutions before January 1st.
And they need their immunizations.
That's right.
It all ties together.
They've got to have a plan. And, you know, if your New Year's resolution and you're thinking about it now is to write a book, which I think all these guests today are book worthy. I mean, what incredible information.
That's Marna's dream.
That is Marna's dream. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. This morning we have Marna Friedman. Welcome.
Hi.
So we're talking about people writing their own books, but it sounds so hard and so intimidating. But you're here to debunk that myth, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you say that making a book your next business card is a great idea.
Absolutely. I think that it is probably the single best marketing tool that any business can use. And most businesses think that they're going to go the traditional publishing route. And that's one of the things that I get whenever I meet somebody. They're like, no, I've heard about self-publishing, but I've decided that I'm going to get a traditional publisher and I'm going to go a traditional publishing route. And having thought about that route and almost going that route, I can tell you that that's for a business, depending on what it is that you want to write about, number one, you have to have an agent. So an agent, to get an agent to sign you is probably going to take you, if you can find one, it might take you 6 to 12 months if you're lucky. Then once you find the agent, you've got to get the traditional publisher. And a traditional publisher, once they accept your book, is going to take 12 to 18 months to produce it. So now you're looking at 2 years before this book that you are like over the top about, it's going to take 2 years before it hits the market. And that's one of the reasons if you read anything on the web, many of the top people that have been on the bestseller list have walked away from traditional publishing. And it's becoming much more prevalent for a lot of the top people in the industry to walk away from it. If you look at the bestseller lists, most of the names on it are the same for the last 10 years because there's a huge financial investment when a publisher decides to take on your book. And so they're going to go with who they know is going to bring them. I mean, it's a business. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just like we make choices over how we run our business, they want to pay their bills. So they're going to take on the people that they know are going to get the return. And the biggest misunderstanding is that a lot of people think that they're going to go the traditional publishing route because it's not going to cost them anything, because the traditional publisher is going to take on their book and they're going to handle the printing of the book and they're going to handle the marketing of the book and all the publicity of the book. And that's really a huge misnomer. What happens?
It's going to cost them time.
Well, it's going to cost them a huge amount of time. They lose total control. A traditional publisher now has complete control over editing of your book. So your message that you set out to portray may not be what they want to actually portray. It's kind of like when a screenwriter is hired to do a screenwriting on a book. A lot of times when you read a book and then you go to see the movie and you're like, wait a second, this is so different than what I read. It's because they took liberties with what you wrote. And so when a traditional publisher takes your book on, they now own it. So they can edit the copy to be what they think is going to be marketable. So it may not be the message that you wanted out there. So that's number one. Number two, when it gets to the marketing point, that's where they're going to turn to your agent and go, okay, here you go. And, you know, I spoke on a radio show, I guess, last month, and one of the guys knew a client who had traditionally published, and then the publisher handed her the book when it was done, and she had to spend $30,000 on marketing and was totally unprepared and had no clue.
Right. That's something an author just, they think that they're going to be treated like Stephen King.
Exactly.
Right? And that's just not the case, is it?
No. And, you know, when Stephen King started out, before Stephen King was Stephen King, he didn't have that either. Stephen King developed into somebody who, a publicist's dream. And so his publicist makes their living on making sure that everybody knows when Stephen King comes out with a new book.
But when a first-time author, I find that when they come out, they think that, they're going to set me up on talk shows, and I just have to sit back and the sales come in, right?
No, that doesn't happen.
And typically, how many books does a traditional, you know, a new author sell? Like, what's a good number, do you know?
I don't know off the top of my head. I do know that it's minimal. A few people that have gone the traditional publishing route I've spoken to, and what does happen is the publisher will give you free books to give away in order to drive sales. And you don't make any money on those.
Right.
And when you do make money on a sale, your royalty, a traditional payback on a book that goes through traditional publishing, is about a dollar. Right. And from that dollar royalty, you now have to pay taxes and a publicist and an agent.
There's very few millionaire first-time authors, huh?
Yeah.
That's not a good path to riches.
No.
And so the benefits then of an e-book or a self-published book is that you have it in your hand. It's real. You can get it out quickly. And you're getting all the benefits of a traditionally published book. Like, people don't know the difference between a book from, you know, McGraw-Hill and then something you self-publish nowadays.
No. When you go to the bookstore and you're shopping in Borders and you pick up a book, you're typically not turning it over to see who the publisher was.
Right. You know, I only buy McGraw-Hill.
Right. Like, exactly. Exactly. And the thing is that the other strategy, when I work with my clients, I basically, from the get-go, I make them develop their marketing plan from the beginning. So I help them strategize over what are they hoping to gain from this book. And I make it very clear that if you are, and that's one of the reasons I have the tagline, make a book your next business card, you can't look at it for the financial gain of having the book. You need to look at it as the benefit of having, you know, that's your voice, that's your message. And so it's, that becomes a huge marketing tool. And the other thing that you can do is you can self-publish to traditionally publish, because if you do the marketing right on your book and you come up with a great marketing plan, you can leverage that to get a traditional publisher to pick you up and then want to take over, especially when you have a series of books and products and things that you want to come out with. You can now leverage all of that through self-publishing. And the thing is that your royalties on a self-published book, you know, can typically be, you know, $4-$5, and depending on your industry and how much the retail is on books that are traditionally published in your industry, it could be even higher. And those are 100% profit. That's yours. And depending on how you decide to print, most of my clients, I tell them not to go with a printing technology where they would have to own inventory, because that's the other thing.
So you like print on demand?
Print on demand. And you also, I go through all of the legal issues, and depending on what their topic is, I do advise them to get the advice of an attorney, especially because of the content. But I also recommend very strongly to all of my clients, I don't, unlike most people who do book coaching and publishing for clients and help them with these projects, I don't publish my clients' books. I make my clients form a legal entity of their own and become their own publisher and own their own ISBN numbers and have complete control over their books.
Now, what's an ISBN number?
An ISBN number is a number that's assigned to your book and identifies your book. And an ISBN number is totally separate from that barcode that you see on the back of the book, but the barcode is your ISBN number.
So that's what allows it to be on Amazon.com and
it's what allows it to be sold.
Okay.
So, and it allows it to be identified. And so what you want to make sure of is, you know, just like you would research the name of your business, you want to research the name of your book. You want to make sure that your the name of your book, if you, you know, if you name your book the ABCs of Wellness, and then you go to register it, and you find out that there's 20 other books out there that are the ABCs of Wellness. Well, what's going to make somebody realize when they go in and say, you know, go on Amazon and they go to order your book? It's kind of like when you don't register a .com for your business and you go to type in the URL and somebody else's business comes up because they own the ISB, they own the .com. So you want to make sure that you're using a unique name for your book. You want to make sure that you form a legal entity that's separate from your business that publishes your books, because from a tax strategy as well, that's your intellectual property. Mm-hmm. So you can then hire your publishing company too, and that becomes where I recommend that you speak to an attorney, you speak to an accountant, and get all of that advice, because especially if you're going to be, most people that I speak to, especially in business, they are not looking, they're not one-hit wonders. They have a lot to say, and they're looking to write a series of books. I mean, I'm in the process of writing the third of my series, and 4 and 5 are right behind it. And so you want to make sure that you do all of the things that you should be doing properly from the get-go. Most people, when they self-publish, they don't think about marketing. They think about, oh, this is great. I can publish my own book. I'm going to write it. I'm going to design it. I'm going to do the layout. Your book is a reflection of you. So submitting a PDF of a Microsoft Word document, not really the best idea.
But if someone's working with you, how quickly can they go from, hey, I have this idea for a book, to actually have a book in their hand?
It's kind of like boot camp. They dictate how successful they are with it.
Right.
It's like dieting. You know, once you make the commitment.
But if I'm like highly motivated and I'm ready to go and I got this idea, I got maybe an outline of this idea. So now, but I've never, you know, I don't want to get involved in all of the minutia of actually getting it out the door. So I want to work with you. How quickly can we get this thing in someone's hands?
I did my book in a week.
So literally, if we have an idea and it's pretty thought out, I can start working with you. We can flesh out it. I can get a book. You know, I can give you the content. You're going to help me all steps of the way, right?
Absolutely. From forming the legal entity to design and layout to putting together a marketing plan
to getting it to
the printer.
To the ISBN
to getting
number.
The ISBN, to getting your copyright, to getting your Library of Congress number,
and then,
to getting it in books and print, all of the details.
And then when it's printed, it's available. I'm sure you have contacts to get it into Amazon.com and all the places that all the bookstores, you know, distribute their books.
Absolutely. While you are writing the book, I also put you through a series of questions that helps me figure out what the best venues are for your marketing, and we create a virtual book tour.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of that has to be done ahead of time, because if you don't do advanced review copies before you release your book, you have lost an unbelievable marketing opportunity, because most PR firms, most press outlets won't touch your book once you've released it. So if you don't follow that strategy and give them advance review copies, you've now missed that opportunity. So you would then have to re-release the book with an update to get it out
to
there
benefit,
again
right.
and benefit from
but
that
But that's one of the benefits of self-publishing, is you can re-release, right?
Yes.
It's easy to have second,
oh my God, yes.
second and third printings or updates of this.
Absolutely. And your fixed hard costs of publishing, I mean, an ISBN number is under $200. A copyright is $35. There is no cost for a Library of Congress number. So really, if you're truly a do-it-yourselfer, you don't use somebody like me, you can have a book out there for, you know, $200, $250. Yeah, a few hundred dollars and you're done.
In time for Christmas, too. How quick is that turnaround?
That's right. I'm sure there are people working on their Christmas books right now.
There's actually the number one book in history of a self-published success is actually the book, The Christmas Box.
Oh, yes.
And
yes.
That was written as a Christmas present. He was a marketing director.
Hmm.
He wrote that book as a Christmas present for his children. He self-published a number of copies for his children and for the family, and it was purchased by a traditional publisher, I don't know if it was within a year or 2 years, for over $4 million.
Wow.
And the book is tiny book.
It's a quick read, a couple-hour read. Mm-hmm. Wow, great information. Tell our listeners how they can reach you, because we've had so many guests that we always say, you should write a book. Tell us how folks can reach you.
They can reach me at strategicselfpublishing.com, and they can email me at marna@strategicselfpublishing.com.
Great. Terrific information.
Yeah, good stuff.
Great information.
Thank you.
Last but certainly not least, next up we have Melanie Mueller. Welcome.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me.
You've been so patient over there, but you look so good. The fact that you're in the fashion industry doesn't surprise me. Tell us about your company.
So Mel Boteri is a business that I officially launched about a year ago, and we are a business dedicated to custom fashion. We currently specialize in women's handbags, so everything from clutches, small, mid-size, large handbags. I have about 19 designs right now that I'm working with, and each one has anywhere from 2 to 6 different style options. So once a client selects the bag that they like and they choose the, accessories, pockets, et cetera, they can then choose from about 50 to 100 different leathers to create a truly one-of-a-kind handbag.
Very cool. So do you have a showroom, or is this all done online?
I do have a showroom. It's in Buckhead in the Tower Place 100 building. So I don't have a storefront. It's by appointment only. Okay. And then I also have a fully e-commerce website where people can go on and customize a handbag.
Have you always been in the fashion
world? Have not. I actually started my career in banking. I was a compliance officer for a small community bank.
Handbags, banking.
Yeah.
There you go. There you go. You got to put the money somewhere. Right?
Exactly. So I did that for 2 years, and I quickly found out that that is not where my passion was. So I bought myself some time. I went back to school, went to Emory, got my MBA, and kind of, like I said, bought myself time to kind of figure out what it was I really wanted to do. And I've had a lifelong desire to have my own business. I just didn't know exactly what it was going to be. And it was actually a marketing professor that gave me the idea for custom fashion. He kind of just gave me the general concept. And initially, I wasn't really that into it. And it was actually my experience up in New York. I went there for a summer internship, worked for Zach Posen, a designer up in New York, and it was my time there that made me really realize that there was a potential market for custom fashion. I mean, I can remember one incident where one of my best friends came to visit me. She had an interview, and she wanted to find some, basic camel pumps. I mean, not anything too crazy. So we literally went up and down every street, every avenue in New York, and just could not find what she was looking for. Either, we'd find something similar and they didn't have her size, or whatever. We just didn't have much success. And there was actually multiple shopping trips that I experienced, the same thing, which kind of confirmed to me, okay, I'm not the only one going through this. So there really is a potential market out there. So after that internship, I came back, finished up my second year of grad school, wrote the business plan, and when I graduated, I decided just to go for it.
That's great. Yeah. And I would be your ideal client because I hate to shop. Yeah. I would come online, and I mean, I know exactly what I want. That's the problem. I know what I want. I know what color. I know what I want it to
exactly.
look like. And then I go in and I can't find it.
Exactly.
So where are the handbags made?
The handbags are made in Portugal. Now, the leather and the components are all Italian and Spanish and some Portuguese materials, but they're all handmade in Portugal. So fully European, no made in China.
And what is the turnover? I know the holidays are approaching. Is it too late for holiday orders?
It is not. The turnover is actually fairly quickly. For a fully custom bag, it's only about 2 weeks, and sometimes it's even quicker. So, I'm telling people for Christmas in particular to get your orders in by December 10th, but even a couple days after that, you should have it in time.
So can you walk us through how it works? Like, do I just come to you with an idea?
No. So if you were to come to my showroom, I would show you my designs. I have about 19, as I mentioned. And then I have a catalog which shows you the different style options. So there's different handles. You can add or take away pockets, add tassels, whatever. And then once you select the style that you like, we then go through all the leather options. And there's probably close to 100 different leather options. It's all real leather, calfskin, suede, patents, different colors, different prints. And then we kind of, go through mix and match until you find the combination that you like. And then all the hardware on the bags can be either gold or silver. As far as fully customizing a design, I can take on those projects. Obviously, there's slightly different charges and whatnot. I mean, the one thing I won't do is if someone were to come to me with a Gucci bag and be like, will you replicate this? I definitely won't do that. Yeah, no. So there's quite a lot of freedom, though.
But do you come up with designs every year? There's a new round of designs?
So I have my basic custom collection, which I try to add new designs every 6 months or so. And mm-hmm. then I started doing seasonal collections. So I just launched my first, well, not just, but a couple months ago, launched the fall winter 2010 collection. So I'll continue that where, you know, there'll be spring, summer.
So every season you'll come up with
kind new designs. Exactly.
What's the smallest handbag you have?
I have a little wristlet. It's called the Amber. And
does it hold a cell phone?
It does hold a cell phone. It's the smallest one, but it's still, you know, very practical. You can put your cell phone, you know, all your essentials, your credit card, a little bit of makeup. And then it's very versatile because it comes with a little wristlet strap, but then also comes with a chain strap that you can wear it cross body.
Mm.
So that's the other thing. I try to make the bags very fashionable, but very practical at the same time.
I'm all over that. I'm not a purse person, and every purse I own is really tiny because I just need my cell phone, a credit card, my driver's license, and my chapstick.
And I'm working on wallets, so you might be more of the wallet girl.
Yeah, but a wallet with a strap. I mean, I'll show you my purse. Hold on.
Now, do you do only handbags now, or there's other things?
My purse from REI. And nice. Look at this. I took this to Europe, and I haven't switched out since. But I can actually zip my cell phone in there. But how pathetic is that? I mean, this is the smallest purse ever. And this is big for me. So I got to check out your website.
Yeah. And I mean, it's like I said, you have quite a bit of freedom. You know, it's fun because when I meet with clients, they'll kind of come up with things that I didn't think of. I actually got the crossbody chain strap idea from a friend of mine, and so yeah, you know, you can come to me with your ideas and we can work it out to create your own custom bag. Now, as far as products, it's just handbags right now for women. I do eventually want to get into men, so men's laptop bags, duffel bags, wallets, and then the ultimate goal is to get into shoes.
Yes, I
want to offer.
Yes, I love shoes.
Yeah, we're actually developing the shoes right now. We're working on offering custom fit and custom design shoes. Now, the manufacturing is a little bit tricky there, so it might take some time, and I may, depending on how long it, you know, I think it's going to take, I may start with just custom design shoes in a standard size, which I think still a lot of women would appreciate.
But how did you learn all this about the manufacturing and all this?
Kind of just hands-on, you know, in terms of finding manufacturers. It's a process kind of going through different associations. There's just an association for everything, you know, leather goods associations.
Right. So you have one manufacturer or there's multiple?
I have multiple that I'm working with.
Depending on what style the person chooses?
Exactly.
What's the price range?
The price is about $300 to $800. That's for a fully custom, one-of-a-kind, no one else is going to have it, mm-hmm. handbag.
Well, I mean, it's something, too. If it's a classic style, you'll have it for a long time.
Right, exactly.
That's a great investment. Great gift, too, for someone that has everything. That's
exactly.
A fabulous gift.
For the person who seems to have it all, they won't have this. I mean,
but is it, when you give it as a gift, do you give them the experience of customizing it?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's probably best to do a gift certificate. I do have gift certificates I'll give you like a gift certificate with a catalog so the person kind of knows what to expect. But I think the experience is part of the
gift. So they can go in there and touch the leather. Mm-hmm. They can go in there and kind of, I like this, I don't like this, and they
exactly.
work with you. How long does it take to kind of walk a customer through this, a handbag?
I typically set aside about an hour. Mm-hmm. It's usually about an hour, if not a little less. I mean, it just depends on the person, you know. And
how long would it take you, Amy?
It wouldn't take me very long. It would have to be
bam,
small.
Bam, bam, bam.
Yeah, it would have to be small. I used to say if I couldn't put it in my shoe, I couldn't carry it. No, it has to be easy to carry. I don't know what it is. I just don't like the responsibility of having something in my hands, probably because I talk with my hands so much. Yeah, I can't handle a purse. I'd hurt someone with it. And I've always wondered what people put in their purses. When I see these people with a big purse.
Look at her purse.
Well, I have my laptop in that one.
Oh, wow.
Laptop.
That's good for you.
Organizer.
Your iPad holder.
Yes, a customized iPad holder would be great.
Yeah, I've actually thought about doing that. Oh, you know, more business accessories for women. I mean, even just a laptop bag. I do have a laptop bag design. I haven't had it manufactured yet, but, you know, for the businesswoman who wants to be fashionable.
Right. That's a great idea. Mm-hmm. Great idea. Give us the website one more time, and then maybe just inspire our guests with or our listeners with a story about how you just took that plunge. I mean, a lot of people think about starting a business, but there's so many obstacles and they think of so many reasons why they can't.
Right.
So give us a website and then maybe some last thoughts for our listeners to motivate them.
So the website is melboteri.com. That's MelBoteri.com. And in terms of taking the plunge, you know, like I said, I was in banking for 2 years, and I guess that experience made me realize that I wanted to be passionate about what I was doing. I guess that's what drives me, just enjoying what I'm doing and working for myself. I mean, there are days where I'm like, oh, I should have just gotten my, you know, typical corporate job, have that steady income. But, you know, it's waking up every day with new challenges and just feeling passion about what you're doing. That really kind of keeps me going. And it's not impossible. I mean, if I can do it, I feel like anyone can do it.
That's
so
great. Yeah. Great advice. Great show, Lee.
Yeah, had a little of everything.
Yeah, a lot of information for our listeners. Until next week, I'm Amy Otto with the Atlanta Business Radio Show. Thanks for listening.